This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
With 3:10 remaining in the third. Jets by two. Ford DeBrincat on the far side. 2-on-1 with Anisimov. DeBrincat now joining the rush. It's Anisimov. Takes a pass. Shoots and scores. 2:52 remaining in the third period. We have a one-goal hockey game. It's 6-5 for Winnipeg. Artin Anisimov gets his team within a goal.
Paul Edmonds with the call Thursday night. The Jets managing to hold on to defeat the Chicago Blackhawks by a 6-5 margin. It was once 6-3 late in the third period, but what is becoming somewhat of a pattern, the Jets letting teams back into games occurred again. They were still able to hold on, though. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 1st of December. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Best way to reach us here in studio is via Twitter. You can send us your comments at Illegal Curve. If we like it, we may even read it on air and salute you accordingly. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's illegalcurve.com. I say good morning to Mr. Ginsberg on my immediate left, Dave Minuk on my far left. Gentlemen, good to see you on this first day of a new month.
A pinch and a punch for the first of the month.
He literally just pinched me and punched me.
Yeah, he did. He did.
What in the world was that? What is a pinch and a punch for the first day of a new month?
I don't know. Naomi does that to me, so I thought I'd do it to you.
Well, I'm going to leave, so good luck for the rest of the show, guys. Dave, you ever heard about that?
No.
No? No. That's a whole new thing I've never seen before.
You can do that with your kids now.
I'm not going to.
It's fun. You don't actually punch them hard. I just gave you a little tap.
It was a little love tap. I know you were just touching me, and I found the whole thing to be a little bit unsettling, I'll be
honest.
Isn't
it kind of fun, though? Like, you do it, and you look forward to it the first day of each month, and it rhymes?
As it's more of an April Fool's thing, I think.
I'm completely unfamiliar with it. I mean, I've known you for, well, I don't know, 34 years, 33 years, and you've never once pinched me or punched me on the first of a month.
So, Drew, you can respond. You can respond, Drew. I'm looking it up right now. The victim may respond with a flick and a kick for being so quick. And then the original attacker may reply with a punch in the eye for being so sly.
How about we just call this whole thing off right now and instead talk about the Winnipeg Jets, because this is eventually going to end with somebody getting stabbed in the kidneys or for some reason. Let's talk about the Jets. Obviously, they split the two-game homestand that they had this week, losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins on Tuesday night, defeating the Chicago Blackhawks by that 6-5 margin on Thursday night.
How is that a one-goal game? I tweeted that out 2 nights ago. Well, like that game should have been signed, sealed, and delivered.
And that, in and of itself, is the problem that we're seeing with these Winnipeg Jets as of late, is an inability to close out teams and to make their lives easy. I mean, we saw it on Thursday night against the Blackhawks. To some extent, we saw it on Tuesday night against the Penguins. I mean, they only had one goal leads, but, you know, they let the Penguins tie the game and then eventually get the game-winning goal on Tuesday night. You saw it against the Minnesota Wild back on Black Friday when they were up 2-0 in the third period and ended up losing 4-2. You can even say, to some extent, you saw it against St. Louis in that it was a high-scoring affair against St. Louis when Laine had the 5 goals last Saturday. So you've seen it, you know, night in and night out to some extent, that the Jets this year have not been as good in putting away opponents as they were last year, where basically entering the third period with a lead for the Jets almost meant an automatic 2 points.
Right, and, you know, some of those goals are garbage time goals. I mean, I don't think we actually expected the Blackhawks to tie that game up, but, you know, by the way, Corey Crawford is having a rough season. Those last two games, he's allowed 12 goals. 6 goals in both of those games. And if you go back to the previous two starts, he allowed 4 goals in each one of those games. And, you know, Crawford obviously was dealing with all of those injuries last year. But, you know, it's been a really tough go for Crawford trying to reestablish himself as the Blackhawks' number one goaltender. But I think what you have to be most concerned about, Drew, is the way the Jets are playing in their own zone. And I realize that Connor Hellebuyck has been struggling personally, and his save percentage has not been good the last what, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks?
Yeah. The Winnipeg Jets in the last six games have given up 26 goals.
Right.
Now, I mean, one of those games, Brossoit started, of course. That was the game in St. Louis. But Connor Hellebuyck, for the most part, has been in net for five out of those six games, and he's given up way too many goals in those games.
Right, and you have to mention you've got Cameron Schilling and Sammy Niku in their first game of the season in the NHL. Cameron Schilling, Dave, hadn't played an NHL game in years, and I actually really liked Schilling's game. I thought he did pretty well under the circumstances. No Joe Morrow, no Dustin Byfuglien, and I know we're going to get into Byf later. We expect Morrow to play tonight, but obviously Byf is not on the trip. Byf's not going to play for at least another week, Dave. But I think I'm more concerned with the way the Jets have played in their own zone and as five-man units, right? The fourth line was out there for the two goals on Thursday night. That's been well documented, and you know, that's probably why we haven't seen their ice time go up from game to game, because Paul Maurice continues to, maybe, let's be honest, not be as trustworthy of those three players. But I think this is a team problem at this point. Is Hellebuyck struggling, Dave? Yes, but I also don't think the Jets have been very sharp at times, in their own zone.
Yeah, and I wrote about that today in the morning papers, because I thought that, you know, it's easy to pin everything on a goaltender who's not playing particularly well. But I also think that, you know, you can't ignore the fact that Jacob Trouba, you know, bails out or tries to kind of, he's indecisive at the blue line, falls. Then all of a sudden now it's a 3-on-1. Then Josh Morrissey kind of goes on to his stomach to try and block a pass. Now it's a 2-on-0, and then they score on Hellebuyck. So, you know, yeah, Connor Hellebuyck isn't as sharp as we are used to seeing him, but, you know, collectively, and you know, the irony is Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, I thought, were very good in that Chicago game. But at the same time, I'm just saying that as a collective team effort, it's got to be better from an entire group. The forwards weren't great. I mean, on that fourth line goal, as when the Jets were on the Hawks blue line, and then Jack Roslovic loses the puck, and instead of, like, corralling it, manages to push it forward towards the Jets zone. Then the last guy back is Brendan Lemieux. He's basically not really doing anything. He's trying not to take a penalty, obviously. But then they come in and they score on Hellebuyck. So, I mean, it just seems like it's a little bit Keystone Cops right now with the Jets, you know, totally as a collective defensive effort right now.
And I think, guys, it comes down to transitioning the way you play when you have the lead, right? They've really struggled, Drew, to get into lockdown mode. That's really the issue here. It's not just blowing the leads, but it's the way they're blowing the leads.
Well, last year, when they were, you know, entering into lockdown mode, as you just said, they cycled teams to death. I mean, that's what you saw last year, is the puck would basically just stay in the opponent's zone, which is really difficult to do when the other team is trying to, you know, play a little bit more offensive and they're trying to attack. The Jets were so good at keeping the play on the other end of the ice. This year, it seems like teams are able to gain the Jets' blue line with a lot more ease. The team seems to have more difficulty in clearing their own zone. I mean, I can't count the number of times in that game on Thursday night that the Jets had an opportunity to clear their own zone and they turned the puck over, or they just weren't able to, you know, there was a solid forecheck coming from the Blackhawks, whatever it might be. There were just time and time again where the Jets were unable to get the puck out of their own zone, which led to a lot of scoring chances, which led to some goals. You know, it's right now, I think it's too easy for the opponents in and around the blue paint of Connor Hellebuyck. Now, Connor Hellebuyck hasn't played very well, so I'm not excusing him. I mean, the Jan Ruda goal on Thursday night should never go in. I mean, there's goals in the last number of games that should just never go in, and they didn't go in last season. But in addition to that, goal mouth scrambles, and Paul Maurice talked about this, and I want to play the clip in a minute here. You know, goal mouth scrambles right now, the Jets are too passive. They're not winning those puck battles in front of Connor Hellebuyck like they did last year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, boys, do we maybe see Lauren Brossoit today?
Well, you're either going to see him today or you're going to see him tomorrow. I mean, the Jets go back-to-back.
And we're going to see Corey Schneider in net for the Devils tonight.
Keith Kincaid played for the Devils last night.
Right.
They lost to the Capitals?
Yeah, 6-3.
It was 6-3. And they actually, you know, got it to within one goal. It was 4-3, and then Washington scored two empty net goals. So you're going to see Corey Schneider, who's really struggled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he struggled even more than the other Corey Crawford.
Yeah,
obviously also coming off of those injuries. But I think there's a chance you see Lauren Brossoit tonight.
Well, like I said, either tonight or tomorrow night. And, I mean, the Jets obviously will figure that out, and we'll know later on. We'll know more this morning when the Jets take their morning skate. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. Talking about the Jets last two weeks or so. We'll talk about Patrick Laine coming up next segment and his performance. But I want to hear from Paul Maurice. He addressed what I was talking about these scrambles in and around the goal mouth of the Winnipeg Jets as of late. Here's Maurice. This is from post-practice, or this is from the post-game on Thursday night.
Two goals against on scrambles. Is it just guys not... Is it communication, or what do you see on those two? Or just not picking up the right guy, or...
Or a guy? Yeah, at that point, when the puck's within a foot and a half of your goal, you really don't have to sort out who's got who. Take the guy with the puck on your stick.
You know, it's pretty straightforward from the coach there. You know, he's saying, we're not even taking a guy. Not even, you know, taking the guy that's your responsibility. But you see it. There's nobody, especially on that on the goal that Dominic Cahoon scored.
Right.
You know, the fourth line is caught on the ice there, and they're not...
Yeah, that's a puck battle goal.
They're just not even hitting anybody. Their bodies, they're not boxing anybody out. Just go in there and knock somebody over in the worst case scenario.
And I'm with Paul Maurice there.
Yeah.
I mean, that goal shouldn't have been scored, and what he's saying there is our players have to be tighter in their coverage.
They're passive.
That's all he's talking about there. You just have to be tighter to your man. You have to make sure you're clearing those loose rebounds. That's pretty... simple stuff. I mean, that's not anything that you'd need to have watched hockey for 20 years to know. I mean, those are the types of goals that drive coaches insane.
Well, the Jets players, if you look at the highlights, the Jets players are all sort of on the outside of the puck battle, and the Blackhawks guys have dominant position in that instance, and that can't happen in that situation. And that's what didn't happen last year, is the Jets were so responsible defensively, and they were so conscious defensively of how they're playing. And they, you know, if you wanted to go in front of Connor Hellebuyck, and you wanted to get to the dirty areas, quote unquote, well, you had to scratch and claw through the Jets defenders and the five man unit to get there.
Right, and going back to what we were talking about before, some of that is a function of not having Buff in the lineup. Some of that is a function of having two rookies in the lineup. Realize Cameron Schilling is a veteran AHL defenseman, but Sammy Niku's still a rookie, and Schilling is a rookie in the sense that
he hasn't played an NHL game in four years.
So it's a function of that, and I think it's also a function of the game. I mean, there were goals scored early. What was it, 2-2 after one period?
It was a high scoring game after the first 10 minutes. It was a bit of a sloppy game
mm-hmm. for both teams, right? So I think it was a little bit of a function of that. But when you look at the macro level and the way the Jets have played as of late, you know, you go back to the Minnesota game, you go back to the Calgary game, where they allowed six goals. I think one of those was an empty netter, but regardless, five goals were scored in that game on Hellebuyck and Brossoit.
Five were scored in the first period.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a concern here.
It is definitely a concern, and, you know, the Jets obviously will look to sharpen up in that area. Busy weekend ahead. You got tonight in New Jersey. You got tomorrow night in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers. And then you got Tuesday against the Islanders.
And, you know, there was some thought as to whether the Jets were going to recall a defenseman. Paul Maurice talked about it because they didn't have an update as to the status of Joe Morrow yesterday following practice. He said he was going to get one in the afternoon. But as we saw with the Moose playing in San Diego last night against the Gulls, all six defensemen who played for the Moose on Thursday were back in the lineup on Friday night. Sorry, on Wednesday, were back in the lineup on Friday night. So, obviously, the Jets didn't need to recall anyone, which means Joe Morrow made the trip.
He made the trip. Whether or not he'll be in the lineup as the seventh defense or available as the seventh defenseman or in the lineup tonight, we'll see later.
I would think if you bring him, that means he's sufficient to play, which if that's the case, they're going to probably put him in.
That logically makes some sense. Like I said, we'll bring you all the latest from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate as it occurs in New Jersey. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
For Little, the line, he scores! Bufflin down to Wheeler. Great job. Back to line again. Scores! Jets get a power play goal and lead 3-2. Cross the line with Lemieux. Line, scores! Patrick Laine has the hat trick. Turned over in front of the net. Laine scores! Patrick Laine on the turnover has his fourth. Brian Little, Laine's alone in front, scores! Patrick Laine has goal number five and his 19th of the year.
18 goals, one assist in the month of November for Patrick Laine.
I love that he only has the one assist.
It sort of adds to it a little bit. Like, zero assist, it wouldn't be as good. One assist is just like, yeah, I got one assist to go with my 18 goals in the month of November. I mean, an absolute historic month for Patrick Laine. It's going to culminate if he doesn't win Player of the Month in the NHL, it'll be a surprise. But Mikko Rantanen has also had a great month for the Colorado Avalanche. We'll probably hear about that. We think Monday, maybe today. We're not 100% sure. Anyways, welcome back to the program. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN Radio 1290. And this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, you can get Bernstein's delivered right to your door. Go online, shop online. It's shopbernsteins.com. It's been an absolutely historic month for Patrick Laine. He gets his 100th career NHL goal on Thursday against the Blackhawks. Sure, he throws in an extra one just for a little bit of icing on the cake. He's the fifth player since 89-90 to score 18 or more goals in a single month. He's the fourth youngest player to hit the 100-goal plateau. It was Patrick Laine at his absolute best, and it was remarkable to watch.
Patrick Laine is the Roger Clemens of hockey. In 1986, Roger Clemens had a record of 24-4, and he won the AL Cy Young. Laine is 22-3.
He's going to win the AL Cy Young?
He's going to win the Rocket Richard, and he's going to win the Cy Young Award, Drew, as you mentioned.
He's a two-sport athlete.
18-1 in November. I mean, guys, quite simply, this was a historic month. It was an absolutely dominant performance by Laine. He was chewing up NHL goaltenders across the league. And for a guy that only had 3 goals in his first 12 games, and that included an empty netter and no even strength goals. Remember 3 weeks ago how we were talking about how Laine can't score at even strength? All of his goals are coming on the power play. Well, Laine can score at even strength now, too.
We had Mike Commodore on Wednesday's show, and he asked us, you know, we were talking about Laine's 5 goals with Mike, and he said, you know, how many of those goals came on the power play? And it was only one. And so he's like, oh, that's pretty damn good. You know, most teams don't score 4 goals in a game, never mind 4 even strength goals for one player in the course of a 60-minute hockey game. It was remarkable.
I think he outscored about 4 or 5 teams.
From last Saturday.
Yeah, it was.
Or for the month, you're saying.
Either or. A little bit of either or. You know, on illegalcurve.com right now, we have the montage of all his first 100 goals. Of course, he has 101, but honestly, I was watching.
Yeah, so if you have 3 hours of spare time, then watch all the goals.
No, it's condensed to 9 minutes, which is still shocking, but I'm not joking. First of all, the funniest part is you realize you watch way too much hockey when you're watching them and you're thinking, I remember that one, I remember
There's
that one.
There's no such thing as too much hockey.
Well, I don't know about that, but
we now bring in our respective wives and girlfriends for their comments.
But no, honestly, like, I was watching it, I thought to myself, like, the sound the puck makes when it enters the back of the net, when he rips it, is just insane. Like, it's just, you know, Jets fans, I think, I don't think anybody takes for granted what Patrick Laine is doing, but it's such an interesting luxury for folks here to have. Sometimes you don't realize what you have, right? And he's just at the beginning of what he's such a special player that he's at the beginning of what he's going to be able to do.
So
he's really scratching the surface, and I can only imagine what he's going to be like in 2, 3, 4 years.
You're right. When he develops more tricks and tools in his arsenal, and he's able to, and he even fills out a little bit more, you're not going to be able to get the puck off of him. And he's got the greatest shot in the world. Those two together makes for such a deadly combination.
And he's still getting his Fortnite games in.
Well, there you go. He's not a member of the Vancouver Canucks, thankfully. Otherwise, that wouldn't be allowed. But Paul Maurice spoke to what your point is, Dave, about, you know, the puck leaving his stick and the skill set that he possesses on Thursday night after the game. Here's what Maurice had to say.
Well, in part because I've never seen a guy shoot a puck like that, like just on the release and the pucks that are going into the net. I think that Patty's got lots of room to be a great player. But the shot doesn't have to get better, right? So I think he's going to get more shots. I think he's going to get different looks as he evolves as a player, as his winger and his center do as well, as that group does. But that shot was there at 18, right? Like, it's been elite. I'm not sure if it can get better. Maybe he'll tell you it can. You don't need a shot to get better. We just need to get him to the puck as much as we can in different areas, and he's going to score. No, I've never seen a guy shoot a puck like this. With the patience, I mean, it's either off his stick before the goalie can react, or he waits, looks, finds it, and puts it there.
Deadly accuracy or a deadly release. I mean, I'm trying to think what NFL quarterback you can compare him to. I mean, who's got a quick release and is deadly accurate. Usually don't necessarily get both. Drew Brees, even Brees' release isn't as quick, but yeah, Brees is a good example. I mean, he really is a magician with the puck right now, and we are fortunate to be able to watch him play hockey in the manner that he is.
Yeah, and, you know, Paul Maurice is talking about that shot, and, you know, he's right. I mean, he has the best shot in the entire NHL. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with this, and, you know, I've told Dave this many times at Jets games. I actually prefer his wrist shot. And I realize that his slap shot is what he likes to go to on the power play, the one-timer. Mm-hmm. But I actually think his wrist shot is more deadly. And that's obviously because, you know, you have more control and all of that. I'm also just an old-school type of hockey fan, and I like the wrist shot more. And I've also told you this many times before, guys. I mean, I think Lion A is a blend of Brett Hull and Mario Lemieux. Obviously, two of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Because, mm-hmm. obviously, Hull had the shot. But Lemieux had the size, and he had the ability with his deking and, you know, his ability to toe drag and all of that. And I think an evolution of Laine's game over the last month has been, and we saw it last game against Chicago, the rebound goal, right? Having a nose for that net. He's not just relying on...
It's not perimeter.
Exactly. It's not all shots from the perimeter, which obviously he's very deadly at,
mm-hmm.
but it's having that nose for the net and kind of anticipating those spots in the ice where he needs to be similar. Mark Scheifele probably does as good of a job as anybody in the NHL. Kyle Connor as well.
Anticipating where the puck is going to be and
exactly.
getting there before the opponent. And,
exactly.
And that's a trait that really, you can't teach that trait. That's a trait that's inherent in any great goal scorer in the NHL is you're just a skip ahead. You're a beat ahead of the defense in knowing where the puck is going to end up and you're always able to get there. You know, what's equally impressive to me over the last month and the tremendous performance of Patrick Laine and the 18 goals is the number of those goals that started by him making a play in the Jets' own zone. Because that's an element, I think, over the last month, really since Finland, that we hadn't seen as part of his game, where he would be defensively responsible, go win a puck battle in the Jets' own blue line, and start a rush. And you can see the full facet of his game is beginning to develop. And it takes time because, again, he's still so young. But it takes time and you can see it beginning to click for him. And it's just going to continually improve. And he's going to be a threat from his own zone all the way out to the opponent's scoring area.
And Dave, sorry, I think we have to give a lot of credit to his line mates, right? Having Brian Little, the responsible veteran center, and Kyle Connor, who is showing us that he's not just a goal scorer, he's got great vision, and oftentimes he's able to use his speed and skill to start the rush. So his line mates deserve a certain amount of credit. Obviously, you know, Lion-A's skill alone, you know, is responsible for a lot of the goals he scores, but his line mates have also been playing really well.
No, I absolutely agree, and, you know, it's funny because people were talking about Kyle Connor and what can he do away from Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and we're certainly seeing that, you know, what he brings to that second line has been, you know, just excellent vision, excellent speed, you know, puck pursuit, everything that you saw him do with that first line, he's doing here with the second line. And as he's right, Brian Little, I mean, it's funny how Brian Little was pilloried a little bit by the fact there wasn't instant chemistry with Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine. And I remember saying, well, maybe it's not that it's Brian Little, maybe it's Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine shouldn't be on the same line together. And so eventually, of course, they moved and we're seeing some chemistry from all those two lines now with those two players separated. So, you know, and as he's right, I mean, it's easy to talk about, oh, well, you know, Brian Little isn't necessarily doing the things he needs to do. Well, you know, he's very defensively responsible for guys who weren't necessarily as such, you know, similarly inclined. The one thing I will say, you know, to Drew, your point about, you know, Patrick Laine and his development is we live in such an instant gratification society that if a player doesn't have everything in his toolbox, it's like, well, what's going on?
What's wrong with him?
And the fact of the matter is, again, we're seeing it being added slowly to it, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen necessarily by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, you see what Alex Ovechkin took to become a little more rounded player, and it took a number of years. So the fact is, it
took him 8 or 9 years.
Right, exactly. So the fact of the matter is, I'm not saying it's going to take that long with Line A. Everybody's different, but the fact is that you've got a guy who offensively is as talented as anybody right now in the NHL with what he's able to do with putting that goal in the back of the net, the puck in the back of the net. And so, you know what, he'll slowly but surely start to add those other things, like, you know, the better defense and a few other elements to his game. But right now, for what he's able to do, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, quickly. I mean, would you say, and I don't want to go too deep in it, would you say he's the best goal scorer in the NHL right now? Has he overtaken Alex Ovechkin as the best goal scorer?
Yes.
I mean, how could you argue with 18 goals?
It's a fair point. Last word on this is going to go to Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler. He was asked about Patrick Laine after Thursday night's game.
Yeah, I mean, the run he's been on, you know, 11 goals in a week, obviously something I've never seen. You know, he's the type of guy that, you know, you ask him why he hasn't scored a goal in 5 games, but you know that something like that's right around the corner. So, you know, what a blessing he is to have. You know, tie game, down a goal, you're never out of it with a shot like that.
He's quite the weapon. When we come back, Ted Wyman joins us from New Jersey, where the Jets and the Devils will do battle later tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. We head out to the New York, New Jersey area, where our good friend Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is on the Winnipeg Jets road trip. Ted, good morning. How is the Big Apple?
Good morning. It's just fine. Very nice day here in New York. Not a bit of snow yet. Actually kind of sunny. But actually, I'm in New Jersey right now. I'm watching the Devils' 4 players out on the ice skating. I guess they played last night, so not too many guys out for the game day skate.
No, a very optional skate for the Devils, clearly. Ted, we spent the first, you know, segment of our program talking about the Jets and their defensive dysfunction as of late. I mean, we can, you know, the numbers. You go back over the last 6 games, and the Jets have given up 26 goals against. From your perspective, is this a blip? Or is this something that's going to be a concerning issue for the remainder of the season?
Well, yeah, that is a big question, Drew. I mean, it's 4.33 goals a game in the last 6 games. If that was for the whole course of the season, it would be the worst in the league. I mean, it's not. So they're on about 15th because they were playing a lot better, at least, you know, for a stretch. I didn't think they were very good at the start of the season. And then they had a little stretch where they were really good. And then they've been pretty bad lately. In fact, even Paul Maurice said the other day, we dipped mightily. And I think it's gotten worse. That Chicago game was pretty bad. But then again, of course, that wasn't the whole defensive unit. It's hard to say what it would have been like otherwise. I think it's a concern for sure. It's got to be tightened up soon. I don't think teams that have that kind of defensive play go very far.
Ted, the Devils, as you mentioned, are on the ice right now, and we're going to have to wait until the Jets hit the ice, and we'll find out about an hour and a half from now. But do you think that there's a good chance that we see Lauren Brossoit in net for the Jets tonight?
Yeah, there's a chance in one of the next two, right? And you know, I've been wondering if there was going to be a moment when Paul Maurice said, you know, maybe we're going to give Brossoit a couple of games in a row or 2 out of 3. Just to maybe give Hellebuck a little bit of a break. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to suggest that Hellebuck has played particularly well. Not really all season, and certainly not lately. His goals against average is up over 3. Maybe he could use a little break, and I wouldn't be too surprised to see that happen. Brossoit has been pretty good as well. Not so great in his last game, but pretty good otherwise. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see him shortly, that's for sure.
You know, Teddy, there was no recall as far as we know. You know, all the Moose defensemen played last night, so I suspect that Joe Morrow made the trip and is fine. Do you think Joe Morrow gets back into the lineup if he is good to go, and what do you think the status is of Andrew Kopp?
Well, if he's good to go, he definitely gets back in the lineup because you're not, you know, I mean, that was a pretty makeshift group that they put out there the other night and still managed to win that game, but it was a real struggle in their defensive zone. They were really loose. And I didn't think Niku played very well. Cam Schilling, I mean, that guy, he went out there and did a nice job, but it wasn't great, obviously. So, yeah, you want to get Joe Morrow back in if he's healthy enough. I just don't know at this point, Dave. I haven't seen at all whether he's going to be on the ice. That's another hour away. And then, yeah, like, what do you do with these guys? You know, it's a tough situation because who knows how long Bufflin's going to be out. And who knows what it would happen if there was another injury at some point here. The depth is being seriously tested at this point. Just to the fact that Cam Schilling ended up coming up suggests that the depth is really being put to the test. And that's a bit of a surprise because I think we all thought that was a pretty strong area for them going into the season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day. Our guest is Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. He joins us from the New Jersey Devils game day skate. The Jets will be on the ice in about an hour's time as well. You know, Ted, the fourth line for the Winnipeg Jets doesn't often get a lot of ice time, and on Thursday night when they did get ice time, they didn't do much with it. In fact, you can say that they were pretty poor when they were on the ice. Does Paul Maurice, you know, continue to roll with the same players as part of that line, or could you see a scenario where a guy like Mason Appleton gets into the game for the Jets?
Yeah, I could see that scenario. I'm not sure that's how it would go. I mean, if Kopp does come back in, and I'm sorry, I forgot to answer that part of the question earlier, Dave, but I think if Kopp's on the trip and has a pretty good chance to be playing, then you're going to see that third line possibly reunited with Tanev and Lowry, and then with Perreault going down to the fourth line, maybe with Roslovic and escaping me right now who else would be on that line. But it's, you know, like, I mean, obviously that's going to be a pretty good, a pretty decent line if you've got Perreault on it. They should get more ice time. There's no question, but you had it right. They did not play well in that last game. They gave up goals and they were out of position. They had, you know, odd man rushes, that kind of thing. It's just not good, right? Like that's the one thing that you can't do, because the little bit of ice time you get, if you're not generating anything in the offensive zone and you're actually getting scored on, I mean, that's just, that just doesn't work at all. And it's not going to give Paul Maurice a lot more faith in putting that line out there.
You know, Teddy, Patty Laine is getting all of the headlines right now, and deservedly so, 18 goals in 1 month. I mean, we just haven't seen that from a Winnipeg Jet 2.0 ever. And, you know, he's obviously, you know, put himself in the history books. But I thought Mark Scheifele was the Jets' best forward against Chicago, 3 assists. And Scheifele's got 16 points now in his last 10 games. And the fact that, you know, more people aren't talking about him, is that just a sign that that's what we expect out of Mark Scheifele? Or, you know, should we maybe be talking more about how hot he's been offensively as of late?
It seems like there's an opportunity for him to fly under the radar a bit just because of how good Laine is and how many headlines he attracts. And then, obviously, Blake Wheeler's been the big assist man and the points leader. Scheifele didn't get as many points last year because of an injury. And so maybe he does fly under the radar a little bit. I think Nikolaj Ehlers has also been really good, and what a fantastic game he had offensively the other night. It was interesting that he actually, you know, immediately came out and said, I didn't play well defensively, though. So, you know, he's not taking too much credit for that, but it was nice for him to be able to put the puck in the net a bit, no doubt, and big confidence booster. But, you know, that line is really good. And you got to say, right now, the Jets have two really outstanding lines. I mean, with the way that Little and Laine and Connor have really played so well, and then that top line with, you know, that's just a wealth of talent. And Scheifele definitely has that ability to break games, you know. And the couple of goals he had the other night in the Pittsburgh game were really nice goals. And 3 assists the next night. Yeah, he's starting to put up the kind of points that you would expect from him. He's pretty much a point-of-game player in the NHL, and that's not that easy to do.
Now, Teddy, I'm not going to lie. I was really hoping when you were talking about Mason Appleton, you were going to say he's going to play tomorrow night in the Big Apple.
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it?
I was hoping. We were discussing that.
I think it would be a good chance for him. You know, I think it would be a good chance for him to get into the lineup at some point. You mentioned that before. Has Nick Kattan really done that much that he has, you know, that it would be a huge difference if they gave Mason Appleton a chance? I think it's worth a try at some point here to get that line going.
You know, Ted, your colleague Paul Friesen was in the scrums earlier this week, and he was talking about Byfuglien and the question to put him back in. And now, in retrospect and hindsight, being what it is, do you think the Jets made the wrong decision? And more importantly, do you think this is a decision that's going to impact the way the NHL looks at concussions moving forward?
Boy, I think so, yes, Dave. I think they did make a mistake by putting him back in. I don't think that made any sense at all. I don't understand why there wasn't somebody in the organization saying, why are we putting him back in? I mean, look at the way he was on the ice. And I know we're not doctors. We can't just diagnose a guy. But you know that something went wrong there. His legs weren't working properly. He had no balance. I mean, sure, he passed this concussion protocol, but common sense would dictate that there could be something wrong there. And they know that these things come in at a delayed in a delayed fashion, that it's worse the next day or the day after. If that's the case, why not err on the side of caution? And I know Paul wrote that it was more erring on the side of winning, and that the NHL kind of facilitates that with the way that the system is set up. His column with Dr. Charles Tater from the Canadian Concussion Institute was really eye-opening. And yeah, I mean, this is a man who devoted his life to talking about concussions and researching them and understanding what effect they have in sports. And, you know, he says you just can't look at a situation like that and not know that this is a concussion situation. I think a lot of us, I'm sure you guys did when you saw it, you thought that's what this outcome was going to be. And sure enough, 2 days later, that's what he was diagnosed with. And it's just not a good situation. Yeah, I think maybe the NHL can use this as a case where they may need to change the way they do things.
Ted, going back to Mason Appleton, Appleton hasn't played a game yet this year, and you mentioned that, you know, it could be Nick Batan that comes out of the lineup. I mean, isn't there a chance that if Appleton does go into the lineup, whether it's tonight or tomorrow or against the Islanders, that it's Brendan Lemieux that comes out of the lineup?
Absolutely, it could be that too, right? I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there, but I would say, to me, Lemieux comes out just on the fact that Kopp comes back and Perreault goes onto that fourth line. So if Appleton and Perreault, or Appleton and Kopp are both getting in there, then I would see maybe Patan coming out as well.
Right.
Ted Wyman joins us from Winnipeg, from the New Jersey Devils game day skate. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Ted, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
You too, Ted. Thanks again. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Devils and their road trip through New York. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Back to the blue line for Lovejoy. Lovejoy doesn't shoot it. Butcher's shot is blocked. And this one comes to an end as the Winnipeg Jets defeat the New Jersey Devils by a score of 5-2.
That was from about 3 weeks ago. The Jets and Devils met for the first time this season at Bell MTS Place. A victory by the Jets back on Remembrance Day. Dennis Bayak with the call from that November 11th contest. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Tonight, the Jets into New Jersey to face them, a 6 o'clock puck drop. You can hear the game live here on TSN 1290. Tomorrow, they go back into Manhattan to face the Rangers at the 5 o'clock central puck drop. And then Tuesday, they play against the Islanders. I believe that game is that game in Brooklyn or is that game at the Nassau Coliseum? I honestly don't know because the Islanders play tonight at the Nassau Coliseum, I believe, and I'm not 100% sure where Tuesday's game is because the Islanders are playing some games this year in Nassau and some games in Brooklyn.
You see that they're bringing the fisherman jerseys back.
Well, sure, everything that's horrible is once popular again, so you might as well.
Captain Highliner.
I had a hat with Captain Highliner on it.
The game's in Brooklyn.
The game's in Brooklyn on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a little disappointing. We went to the old...
Jay-Z will be there.
We went to the old Nassau Coliseum back in 2011. We did this, the Jets played these 3 and 4 nights.
It was the best trip ever.
Yeah, my bachelor party, of course, so we had a good time. So too bad you can't get back to the Nassau Coliseum. A little bit harder to get to, but it is is one of the classic old barns, and apparently they've done some nice work renovating it, so the Islanders splitting their time there between there and Brooklyn this season. Anyways, the Jets, these three games in four nights. This is the Jets, who are an upper echelon team, against three teams that nobody has overwhelmingly high expectations for. Jets should...
I'm sure the Rangers are in a wild card spot.
Right, but the Rangers are playing way above what anybody would have expected at the beginning of the season.
Well, no, the Jets are better than all three of these teams, saying.
The Rangers are definitely... They're 13-11-2. They are in the second wild card spot.
Yep.
The Devils are... they're tied for dead last in the Eastern Conference with the Flyers. And the Islanders, are a point back of the Rangers. So... the Islanders and the Rangers are playing better than anyone expected, but this is an opportunity for the Jets to really, you'd expect them to take 5 out of 6, four out of 6.
Well, you'd love to take 6 out of 6, but you've also got 3 games in 4 nights.
Right. So
this is not an easy stretch, guys, and I realized that New Jersey played last night, and I watched the game. And, the Devils had this as a one-goal deficit twice. And as I mentioned in the first hour, Washington scored 2 empty net goals.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Kincaid didn't have his best game. Travis Zajac scored a shorthanded goal in that game. Nico Hischier scored actually a really nice goal, assisted by Taylor Hall. The Capitals are playing really well. I believe they've won 7 in a row. So, the Devils are going to be hungry. They're back in their home arena. And even though the Devils might be a little bit top-heavy, we've seen the Devils quite a bit this year because the Jets played the Devils during the preseason.
Yeah,
so this is actually the third time they've played, obviously 2 in the regular season. But, Hall, Palmieri, Hischier, that's a great line. And Hischier actually, going into last night's game, only had 1 goal in 12 games. So Hischier's got a little bit of the sophomore slump going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesper Bratt is a player that I really like. That's a player that I think Jets fans might not be that familiar with, a little bit familiar with, because they played the Devils last year. Jesper Bratt, I believe, missed the game 3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, or he was just coming back from his injury. He's a really fast, speedy player. But, as someone who watches the Devils a lot, one thing that stands out to me is, this is a very fast team. And going back to last year, a very skilled team, but it's not a big team. And it's a team right now that is struggling quite a bit defensively.
They're having trouble scoring. They're in the bottom 10 in the league in goals for. They're having trouble keeping the puck out of their own net. They're in the bottom 10 in the league in goals against.
But they knew that they were going to have trouble scoring goals. This is not a team that that has the firepower of a team like the Jets, or has the firepower like a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning. Mm-hmm. It's a team that has prided themselves on the way they play defensively.
Corey Schneider, sorry, Ezzy, 0-5 so far this season. Still looking for his...
We talked about that last hour. Yeah. He's really struggled.
860. To the point of an 863.
Yeah, the numbers are bad, Drew.
863 save percentage and a 4.28 goals against average, Dave.
Yeah, and the one thing that Jets fans have to be aware of is while the New Jersey Devils have struggled, they haven't struggled at home. 7-1-3 so far, I believe, in their home games at, in the Prudential Center, whatever
that's
they call
correct.
It now.
That's correct. 11 games.
Swamp in New Jersey. So this is a team that plays extremely well at home, and it's a tough building to play in. And it won't be an easy game. Now, of course, as Ez said, the Devils played last night against the Capitals, and that was an emotional game based on Tom Wilson's hit. So, we're seeing now that Bob McKenzie, I think, just tweeted out that there will be no supplementary discipline for Tom Wilson for the hit.
Let's talk about that quickly. So Wilson, again, on the Capitals, so he played against the Devils last night. He hit from behind Brent Cini of the Devils. Mm-hmm. No supplemental discipline. Wilson received a match penalty on the play and was kicked out of the game. You surprised, gentlemen, about the lack of supplemental discipline for Tom Wilson on the hit on Cini?
Yeah, I am, Drew, because of his history. And I don't care what anybody says. Your history does impact your current play on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
or the current act. Precedent factors in here, right?
Yeah.
So I am surprised. I didn't think he was going to get 5 games, but I thought maybe he'd get a game or two.
Dave?
It was a blindside hit.
Yeah, his coach made a fairly passionate defense of his player, which you would expect. I'm not suggesting.
Of course, he's going to defend his
player. That's exactly what I just said. And I think that, I think ultimately, based on his history, regardless of whether he intended it or not, the fact of the matter is it's things that the NHL is trying to get rid of out of the game. The guy didn't have the puck. He hit him from behind. And it's interesting because a lot of the defense of Tom Wilson I'm seeing online right now is he didn't alter his path to go for the hit. But he also didn't alter his path to avoid the hit.
Sure. And he got a match penalty in the game.
Right. But again, you never know. That could be the result of the refs. I mean, hockey's so fast that the refs see it. They see Tom Wilson.
Come on,
they think
Dave.
To themselves, I'm just saying they have the luxury of time. I'm agreeing with you. I think that he should have been suspended for a game.
Well,
I mean,
I don't know if you heard Alex Chason on NHL Network last night give his analysis. So Alex Chason, it's Alex Tange, not Alex Chason. Yeah. Alex Tange.
Alex Chason currently plays.
It would be odd that he'd be on NHL tonight last night.
Yeah, 11 goals.
Yeah, I know. Alex Tange, pardon my faux pas, Alex Tange, who of course played close to 1,000 NHL games if he didn't get all the way
he
there.
He won a cup with Colorado.
He talked about how Wilson had literally like a lifetime in terms of on ice, in terms of it being on ice to avoid the hit. Sini gets rid of the puck.
That's what I'm saying.
There's like 3 or 4 seconds for Wilson to avoid hitting the guy in the back in the back.
That's what I just said. He had to alter his path, and while he didn't alter it to go for him, he also didn't alter it to not hit him. And I think that's why he deserved to be suspended.
Dave, sorry, I just wanted to go back to what I was saying about Jesper Bratt. He actually did play in that game November 11th against the Jets. That was his second game back from injury.
Right, really good
player, late draft pick in 2016, but that's a guy that is someone to watch for Jets fans.
Playing on the top line.
Hopefully he doesn't score on the Jets, but
playing on the top line with Nico Hischier and Taylor Hall. But your point about the Devils definitely are top heavy. We know that Taylor Hall obviously was a fantastic hockey player. There's no question about that. But after the top line of the Devils, that's really where they begin to struggle and where they're really looking for anything in terms of supplemental scoring. You got guys like Blake Coleman and Travis Zajac who are trying to pick up the slack, but it really does fall off in those bottom lines, and that's where the Jets really can get should be able to get an advantage on the Devils, and then go into New York tomorrow against again the New York Rangers, another team that is looking for some help offensively. They're another team that's one of those top heavy teams in terms of their offensive production. So it's an interesting weekend because it's 3 and 4 nights. The travel is non-existent. It's not like they change hotels. They're staying in the same Manhattan hotel for the next 4 nights. So it's easy travel, but it is the 3 games in 4 nights. It'll be an interesting phenomenon for the Jets as they go through this on this road trip.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we talked about it before. I mean, you look at these teams, and yes, you can beat all 3 of these teams, but you're going to face a Devils team that isn't happy with the way they lost. And I realize you could say that doesn't factor in at all, but I think it does. And, this Devils team might be at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, but this is a team that made the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of see some parallels between the Flyers and the Devils. I mean, both of these teams aren't getting the goaltending. Both of these teams have had very disappointing first quarters of the season, and they're desperate for points right now. All teams in the NHL are desperate. You look at Florida last night, Alex Barkov scored the OT winner against the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, that's another team. I picked the Panthers to be a playoff team. I think many people picked the Panthers to be a playoff team. And I realize that, history shows that if you're in a playoff spot by American Thanksgiving, even though there were, 4 teams last year that still got in, but I mean, the Devils are one of those desperate teams, and even though the Rangers, I think we would say, probably has not as good of a chance as getting into the playoffs as the Devils, same thing. I mean, these guys have pride, and they're actually playing pretty well this season.
I would suggest of the 3 teams the Jets are playing on this road trip, it's actually the Islanders who have had the best results over the course of the season. They're the only team that has a positive goal differential. They're a +3. The Rangers are a -4 in the goal differential, and the Devils are a -11. So the Islanders, and Brooklyn is a place where the Jets traditionally have had some trouble playing and haven't had a lot of success. I would suggest the Islanders game, which is the Tuesday game, might be the most difficult of the 3 and 4 nights.
Yeah. And the one thing that's interesting, and I don't know what the record of the Islanders at Brooklyn versus Nassau is to compare, but the Rangers are a good home team. They're 10-4-0, and I touched on the Devils being a good home team. So the fact is that this, when you're traveling in the Eastern time zone, it's a lot different than the West. It's not like you're going from, Dallas to Colorado to, somewhere in California, then back to
Vegas to Phoenix.
Exactly. You don't have those sort of,
you barely get on a plane.
Well, that's the whole point. And so the reality is that you're not really like trying your body isn't being put to the test in three games against, you know, these New York or New Jersey based teams. So from a travel perspective, I think it's okay. I think from a you know, the problem is you still have to, you know, with the team that's already dealing with a number of injuries, mm-hmm. you have to hope that you come through these games unscathed. But, you know, I think the Jets are in a pretty good position.
And that's going to be key, right? Andrew Kopp could play tonight. If he doesn't play tonight, he could play later on.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Later on in the road trip. And then when you're talking about Joe Morrow, just because he's on the trip doesn't mean he's necessarily going to play tonight.
Right.
But he could play, you know, against the Rangers or against the Islanders. So that's going to be key here. You know, Cameron Schilling and Sammy Niku, I actually didn't think they played as bad. Obviously, Schilling, you would say, probably played better than Niku. But that's going to be huge, especially in a back-to-back situation. Realize there's not a lot of travel, but you'd like to have, you know, some of those veteran bodies. And realize Kopp is still young, but he's a veteran at this point.
No, I think you're exactly right, Ez. And that's the whole point, is that you can go in against a New Jersey team that maybe is, you know, struggling and, you know, again, just played last night, get some usage out of these guys, and then tomorrow night get an infusion of perhaps one or two new players. Obviously, it could happen. We'll know, you know, very soon. Mm-hmm. The speculation will end very soon. But like I said, if you get those that infusion of kind of healthy guys, then that probably will serve you well against teams that are desperate for points.
Well, with Andrew Kopp back in the lineup, the Jets would be at full force when it comes to their forward group. It's right. The defense, obviously, that's going through the injury bug, with Byfuglien going to be out for the, well, certainly this entire road trip and you know, not skating for a week. And then, of course, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, who's inching his way, getting closer to game action.
Kulikov's interesting. Like, he was skating with the team in a non-contact uniform at their practice on Friday. And Paul Maurice on November 10th said, I'll talk to you guys again in a month about his status, which some people took to mean Kulikov would be back in a month. I took to mean he'll talk to us in a month about Kulikov's status, would be, you know, sometime next week or, you know, in 10 days, sorry. And so to me, Kulikov isn't an option right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could be ahead of of the progress. I wrote about it in the practice report yesterday. I think, you know, we're still not going to find about anything out about Dmitry Kulikov until the Jets get back from this trip.
Well, it's certainly the first adversity when it comes to injuries for the Jets this season. We'll see how they handle it. It starts tonight at 6:00 as the Jets and the Devils will do battle in New Jersey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. Tonight, the Jets and the Devils, a 6:00 puck drop from New Jersey, a game you can hear live on this fine station, of course. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Ken Danico. You know Ken, of course, as a Stanley Cup winning defenseman for the New Jersey Devils. He's now a Devils analyst. Ken, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you this morning?
Very well, Ken. How about yourself?
Doing all right. Thank you.
That's good. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Devils. Want to take you back, though, to last night first before we get into tonight's details. Brent Cini receives a hit from Tom Wilson. Wilson gets a match penalty. The news comes out earlier today. No supplemental discipline for Wilson for the hit. What were your thoughts on the hit, and what are your thoughts on the lack of supplemental discipline as well?
Well, look, I had said it last night. I didn't think it was malicious, that's for sure. And I might be a little more lenient than others because I don't think everything is intentional. Having said that, I know Tom Wilson, for the most part, does not get the benefit of the doubt, and that thus the match penalty. But I guess he escaped one, and that's okay. I mean, that's something that I think he's trying to get better at, as far as understanding he's a big, strong man. He's got to avoid that hit. There's no doubt he's got to avoid that contact. Was it accidentally on purpose? I'm not in Tom Wilson's head, or did he not see him and just try to avoid him? I don't know that, so it's really tough for me to say along the lines. I mean, more importantly, I always look at it like, you know, for me, I've never cared too much. That's for the league to decide who gets suspended and who doesn't. The Devils finally get a call, because over the years they have not gotten calls like that to win them hockey games or give them an opportunity. They got the opportunity to win a hockey game, whether you thought it was a 5-minute major, whether you thought it was a suspension or not. they get the five-minute call and they don't capitalize, and they played a pretty darn good hockey game last night, but they just can't find a way to win on the road, and the power play has really struggled. But Tom Wilson's going to have to be careful. He's got to avoid those contact in the middle of the ice at all costs, and he probably escaped one here. Everybody's going to look at it differently, and obviously in Washington they thought, oh, he didn't do anything. He didn't even try. He didn't screw 5 minutes. And that's natural. That's what most people think. But, you know, me being on the other side and covering the Devils, I like the way Tom Wilson plays. He's a heck of a hockey player. Having said that, he's got to be careful, and he's lucky he escaped this one. And, you know, I can live with that, believe it or not. I know a lot of people are calling for his head again this morning because of the past of Tom Wilson, obviously. But for me, it wasn't malicious. If Brett Cini was hurt, I think he's fortunate he wasn't hurt. He went for concussion protocol, and even though there wasn't a whole lot of contact to the head, it does hit the back of the neck, shoulder kind of area. So he was fortunate. I think if Cini was injured, it might have been different, and he was playing with fire again for sure.
Ken, last night Nico Hischier had a goal and an assist. Prior to last night's game, though, he only had one goal in his last 12 games. Is Hischier still trying to rediscover his game from last year?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, he's creating. I mean, you know, everybody looks at the analytical numbers. Certainly management and organizations do, and I say you use it with caution and balance. And not just with Nico Hischier, but the Devils in general, believe it or not, as good as the season they had, everything fell into place, and they won a lot of one-goal games and made the playoffs and fast-tracked, I guess, what a lot of people thought was not going to be a very good team last year, and he continues to create and play well. He's a complete player. No, do they need, as a team, as a whole, not just Nico, to capitalize on chances? Absolutely more, but he's played pretty well. He's, I think, for his where he's at in his career, the 19-year-old kid, he's going to be a real special player, a good hockey player in this league, if he isn't already. And yeah, it's nice to see him, you know, get going from an offensive standpoint, albeit in a loss. And to him, what I love about Nico Hischier, he's all hockey. He only cares about wins and losses, not his statistics. Yeah, he knows he needs to provide offense for them to win some hockey games here, but it's been tough sledding on the road. But he's a kid that's going to be an important part of the Devils for a long, long time. And, you know, he's played pretty darn good hockey. He's such a complete player. He's so smart in his own zone. And even if he's not putting up numbers at times, he usually has an impact in the game. And I think that's also an important element.
Now, Ken, we're talking a bit about the Devils' struggles, but they're 7-1-3 at home and 2-10-1 on the road. What do you think the reason is for this disparity?
Oh, man, if I had the answer, I'd bottle it and I'd be a multimillionaire. I mean, because last year they were one of the better road teams in the National Hockey League. Matchups might have something to do with it, obviously, but it just seems, you know, even from the outside looking in, and it's tough to pinpoint all the time, but when I'm calling a game at home, I don't care if they're playing a Super Series and playing Team Canada, you feel they can win. When they get on the road, it's kind of hoping they can win because it just does not materialize the complete 60-minute game, and they haven't gotten the big save at the right time or capitalized on a scoring opportunity kind of to coincide on the road. At home, it's different. The effort's there on the road, but, you know, one mistake, two mistakes always seems to be in the back of their net, and that's the way it goes when you're struggling to find wins on the road. Last night, they probably generated against the Capitals, who were one of the hottest teams in the league, along with Colorado. They generated more chances, grade-A, high-quality chances, than they have all season on the road, yet they find themselves on the losing end. And that's a lot to do with Braden Holtby. He was that good last night, and he showed why he's been a Vezina Trophy winner. And that's the way it's gone for him, whether it's a hot goaltender, whether it's them making a mistake, not getting a save. Everything seems to cost them on the road. That doesn't seem to happen as much at home. And again, I know matchups has something to do with it when you get the last line change and they get certain players they want out there. But I just feel everybody to a man has dipped a little bit on the road. And that's all it takes. You're not getting a big save, or your top players are just not quite there like they were last year. And they're still trying to find it. They believe they can. It's still early enough in the season. But it's just been, as you mentioned, night and day on the road. They won one regulation loss at home. And and they just seem to be a different team, and something that they're going to have to figure out. But they've got a real good team in the Jets. They know tonight at home and back-to-back situation, but certainly gives them a better chance of succeeding because they're at home right now just because of the numbers.
Ken Danico is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Devils. Tonight from Jersey, a 6 o'clock puck drop. Ken, the expectation is that Corey Schneider will get the call given that Keith Kincaid played last night in Washington. Schneider's numbers this year, I mean, they're not very good. I don't need to go over them, of course. How is his mentality? How is he able to fight through this adversity? It's been a couple of injury-riddled years now for Corey Schneider. What's his attitude been like?
Well, he's a real pro, and he's a guy that cares. He's a real leader, a guy that puts a lot of responsibility on his shoulders. So he doesn't sugarcoat it. He knows he's got to be better. He knows he needs to make saves, especially at start of games. And then that's another big reason why the Devils maybe have struggled on the road last year. If you remember, the first 2 months of the year, Corey Schneider won a lot of big games before he went down with injury, and Kincaid ran with the ball and played extremely well as Corey battled through some adversity. But he's just trying to find it. I feel he's close. He's played pretty good hockey after giving up a goal or two early on. He knows he needs to make a big save. He's the first to admit it. He's talked about it after games, especially the last game I think he played in Tampa, where he let a few goals in. Devils made mistakes. They haven't been great around him, but he feels he could have had a few. And then the last 40 minutes, he shuts the door and plays like Corey Schneider's capable of. I don't know if that's start of game jitters, what it may be, but he's a guy that's trying to find it. I've been through it as a player, so I never like to beat guys up. He knows he's a pro, and he'd better get better or he's not going to get as many opportunities. I'm not sure he's starting yet, so I could not tell you that. They may go back to Kincaid. That's a possibility. I think Coach Hines will think about it. But having said that, he's a guy, you love, respect him, because I'll tell you, he's awfully hard on himself in post-game interviews after losses. And we know he hasn't won in quite some time now, a regular season game anyway.
Ken, if it's okay, I wanted to go back to 3 weeks ago, Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend. Your very good friend Marty Brodeur was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, but you personally got to play in the Hockey Hall of Fame Legends game, and you scored a shootout goal. First part of the question is, take us through that shootout goal, and second part of the question is, I mean, how special was it for you to see Marty Brodeur, one of the best goaltenders of all time, inducted into the Hall of Fame? Obviously, you won the 3 Stanley Cups with him, but how special of a weekend was that? But we also want to hear about that shootout goal.
Well, first off, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I'll tell you, regardless of being 50-plus years old, a lot of us, and moving a lot slower, when you get out there, the camaraderie, playing with your teammates again, and it's like nothing has changed. When you're in the locker room, when you get on the ice, you know, I obviously thought it was very special to get together again with Brodeur and the 3 defensemen he had for 10-plus years, which we don't take for granted, and Marty talks about it a lot. A big reason why we had so much continuity with Stevens, Niedermeyer, myself, being in front of him for a long time, and that's something that gave us that continuity, gave us that winning formula, I guess you'd say. And I know we were built on defense, but we certainly scored enough goals from our forwards. I hate taking away from them. It was a lot of fun. I feel like we're flying out there. However, you watch the tape and you're moving a lot slower than you think. But it was a special weekend from the standpoint. Now, you know, when you're retired and you reflect, and you know, I think it's pretty surreal and pretty special for me to play in front of arguably the best goaltender of all time for a lot of years, and a big reason why I've been fortunate enough to be part of 3 Stanley Cup championship teams for sure. But just to get out there to be part of the Hall of Fame weekend, you know, gave me goosebumps. I was honored to be invited, and obviously because of my buddy Marty Brodeur, I'm sure he wanted to get his old defenseman in front of him, the other two in the Hall of Fame, the two great Scots. And I got to play with Niedermeyer, and the ironic thing this time is I played with him as a partner for about 5 years, and obviously everybody knows what role it was. I stay back, I protect the net, I protect him, and he goes with the puck. Well, it was kind of opposite in the Hall of Fame game, and Nieder was howling in between periods, telling me, and Lanny McDonald, who was the coach, He goes, I didn't know you were the one who was carrying Niedermeyer all the year. I was up ice all night. I was making up for lost time. Had an assist. I was so excited. I always try to get points in these alumni games because it's a lot of fun when that wasn't your role back in the day. And in the shootout, Lanny McDonald picked me first because of that, because I was up ice and Niedermeyer, he was great. He could still play to this day. He's such a terrific skater, the best I've seen. And he sat back for me and let me go up ice all night. I was exhausted, but then he picks me in the shootout, and all I did is bury my head and shoot it as hard as I could. And Dave Andrechuk, who I played with as well, and the Hall of Famer and 600-plus goal scorers, comes to me after the game. He says, hey, I just want to ask you, you missed your shot, didn't you? You were going top shelf and went five hole, right? And I go, Dave, we're not going to discuss that, but I guess a 600 goal scorer would know I did miss my shot. I'm not going to tell anybody that. Let's keep that quiet. But Turco did open his legs, and if I missed it, fortunately enough, it went between his legs. I shot it pretty hard, but, yeah, I might have been going upstairs, and it didn't quite materialize, but I'll take it.
Ken, you know, I want to ask you about a Winnipegger that's playing for the Devils. Got to ask about Travis Zajac. Looks like he's on pace for not necessarily a career season, but he looks like he can get the 20-goal mark. What do you see from his, it looks like, in a resurgence this season?
Yeah, Travis has been real good. And that's the unfortunate part, because this team, you know, over the years has been, or especially last year, been real good without Travis, bringing a lot of offense, but we know he does so many other things, probably the most responsible forward. For me, one of the better defensive forwards in the game. He's played a long time. He's been a true devil, certainly, and a guy that just comes to work every day and doesn't complain and plays the game hard, a smart high player. And, yeah, now this year he's producing a little more offense again like a few years ago. And he's doing it, you know, at both ends of the ice. I think Travis is having a real strong year considering the struggles of the Devils. So that's what I was talking about earlier, where they did just need to put it together. They haven't been as strong defensively as they've been in, as they have been last year. But overall, Travis, I'm just seeing he's just playing the game hard the right way. He wants to help this team get out of their struggles. And he's always one of those guys, you know. You don't worry about Travis Zajac, regardless of his scoring. He does contribute in other areas, but it's nice to have, you know, your top checker, your top defensive centerman put the puck in net and create some offensive chances when it's there. And he has that ability, and he's been doing it. But he's the least of the coach's worries, usually on a nightly basis for a lot of years now, because you know what you get from Travis Zajac, and that's maximum effort. That's a good, smart hockey game all over the ice.
Ken Danico is a Stanley Cup winner. Of course, he's a New Jersey Devils analyst. Ken, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy tonight's contest between the Jets and the Devils.
My pleasure. Always fun being on with you.
Thanks, Ken. Take care. When we come back, we discuss Tyler Myers and his struggles that he's had this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Truba sends this down. Myers walks it in. By Tyler Myers. He represents pass not once but twice with the double clutch. And how about this? He didn't get the first shot that he wanted.
We have a good goal.
Where he wanted it to go, the second one up over the left shoulder of Raanta. I think that reaction says it all.
From earlier this year, Tyler Myers scoring against the Arizona Coyotes. It's his only goal so far this season. A struggle this year, to put it mildly, for the Jets' big defenseman. One goal, three assists, 4 points in 24 games. And it's been the defensive side of the game. Never mind the lack of offense, because he's way below the pace that he had last year where he had 36 points. It's the defensive side of the game where he's really struggling. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. And this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Or official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. And give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. I suspect Ezzy's going to have to visit Dr. Les Rikus soon enough, because for breakfast this morning, he brought us a giant bag of licorice.
Well, no, I didn't eat that for breakfast. I had a bagel.
Okay.
Guns bagel.
Yeah.
And shout out to Guns. And cottage cheese.
You come on.
I put cottage cheese on my bagel.
Really?
You never do that?
No, I'm not 85 years old.
Drew, you know that when you eat cheese at your cottage, it's just cheese?
And you guys laugh. And you guys just, you know, Dave laughs and producer Sean Asor laughs and Ezzy laughs at his own joke. This is why he says these things. You just encourage him.
That's because they're funny. The guy's got a gift for gab.
I got to say, I did not expect you to be a cottage cheese kind of guy.
And I had also a tomato on there. Well, Naomi made it for me.
Really? That's a lot in the morning.
It's not that it's a lot. It's just a very sort of old.
You're not a fan of the cottage cheese?
Cottage cheese isn't my
thing.
You were
going to say that's something your Baba or Zeta
ate,
right?
Yeah, I was
going
to say it's an old Jewish man's breakfast is what I was going to say there. It's exactly what I was going to say.
I'm an old Jewish man.
Clearly. You know, I was going to say, you know, normally you go to synagogue and then you have that as part of the Kiddush.
Yeah,
but yeah, with a little bit of a schmear of some cream cheese or something. Instead, you're just having it straight off 8 a.m.
I'll tell you this much. I love my four spice.
All righty, let's talk about Tyler Myers, as half of our audience doesn't know what the hell we're talking about at all.
Probably more than half.
Myers has
Introduction
been
to Yiddish is coming up after this.
That's right, with the legal curve. It's been a struggle for Tyler Myers this year. I don't think anybody is surprised at that statement.
It's been a bit of a schmozzle.
You know, you're just throwing me right off track here. What is the problem with Tyler Myers? What ails him? And is this something he can play his way through? Because to me, he just looks like a player right now who has no confidence in his game, and it's impacting his decision-making on the ice.
I don't know about that. I don't think he's playing as bad as some people think he's playing. I think he's had some bad games, Drew. I mean, there's no doubt. You go back to the Calgary game. Remember there were a couple of giveaways there that led to goals? The Calgary game from a couple of weeks back.
Yeah. The Wednesday game about 10 days ago.
Right. I was doing pre and post with Kevin O, name drop. But, you know, Myers, you mentioned Myers had 36 points last year, including six goals.
Yeah.
He's not getting any power play time this year, and he was getting limited power play time last year. As we know, the Jets like to roll out that first power play with only one defenseman, Buff being the one defenseman. Then you've got Trouba and Morrissey on the second power play unit.
Yeah.
So he's not getting any second power play time, which he used to get. So that's affecting him. But I also think what's affecting him is his D partner. And I like Joe Morrow. I'm a fan of Joe Morrow, but he struggled at times too. I realize that, you know, he's been injured the last few games. But, I mean, Kulikov and Myers, Dave, I thought last year was such a dependable D pair for Paul Maurice. Arguably the best third pair in the league, right? Kulikov and Myers, those are two first-round draft picks. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have those two on your third pair, obviously Trouba Morrissey is your top pair, and then Sherratt and Buff was that second pair that Paul Maurice likes to use. So I think it's part of that, right? He's had some different D partners, and obviously Morrow is going to be back in the lineup sooner rather than later, and you expect him to slot in with Tyler Myers. But I think at times he has struggled with his confidence. I don't think, looking at it at a macro level, though, Drew, this is a player that isn't confident, but I definitely do think right now that his game has room for improvement. But based on what Tyler Myers has done throughout his career, I think he will bounce back and he'll start to play better.
Dave?
As he said that, and all I could think about was $10 million on your third pairing. That's a very expensive third pairing for the Winnipeg Jets when Kulikov and Myers are on it. But, you know, Andrew Berkshire wrote an interesting article in the Free Press a couple weeks, maybe a week ago, about Tyler Myers and his struggles and how, you know, if you look at the analytics, they're not necessarily as bad as the eye test would suggest because, you know, just based on
combination of, I think you said it was a combination of bad luck and to some extent bad play, then it's making things look worse than they actually are.
Right. But, you know, to Ezzy's point, I mean, he's a veteran guy, and you get him in the lineup, you know, is he really that impactful considering that you have Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey eating up? And we saw Josh Morrissey eat up, what, almost 30 minutes in the game on Thursday. So you know that those guys are getting the lion's share of important minutes. But the fact of the matter is, Tyler Myers, like a number of other players, have seemed to have struggled in the defensive aspect of the game. And it's something he has to improve upon. And if he doesn't improve, well, then you know what happens next. But from my perspective, is he past the point of being a serviceable third pairing defenseman? No, I think you can slot him in there, but again, he just has to adjust his game. Like to be honest with you, like a number of Jets have to, because the Jets aren't. And I, you know, I don't like to look back at last year because this is a different team. While a lot of the parts are the same, you just got to stop talking about last year's team and just look at it from this year's team. And I think he just needs to just improve.
And Dave, you mentioned the ice time, and I think you make a really good point there, because if you look at Tyler Myers' ice time compared to when he first came over from Buffalo, and Tyler Myers was playing 24, 25 minutes a game. And yes, he's been passed on the depth chart, Drew. I know that. But, you know, against Chicago on Thursday night, 18 minutes and 15 seconds. Against Pittsburgh, 18 minutes and 2 seconds. Against St. Louis, 17 minutes and 40 seconds. I mean, you can go on and on. He's a 17, 18-minute defenseman right now. Whereas Morrissey and Trouba are 23, 24, 25, maybe even more, depending on if Joe Morrow comes back. But if Joe Morrow comes back, obviously he's going to take some ice time away from, you know, whether that was what Cam Schilling was playing or whatever. You're going to play Schilling and Nicou less, Dave, just because they're not regulars. But I think the point is, you know, Myers is I think, a defenseman that does want to play more, and he plays better when he plays more, but that's simply not going to happen. So I think it's also imperative that the Jets coaching staff, and not to say that Charlie Huddy and Paul Maurice and Jamie Compound haven't tried to get him going, but he's clearly not as effective as he was last year. Remember the big goal he scored? Was it against Minnesota in the first round of the playoffs? Remember that dangle goal that he scored? I can't remember which series or game it was. All the games blended together. I have baby brain as well. But when you're talking about, you know, Tyler Myers, I mean, he's
different than the brain of a baby.
What was that beautiful goal he scored?
I know what you're talking about.
Against Minnesota in the first round?
You know, was it
remember
Minnesota?
when he toe dragged, yeah, and then he went
I remember.
Was it top corner on Dubnyk? But he's a great player. I'm not going to pile on Tyler Myers. He has not played as well as he can, but I think he will be better. And to Dave's point, sure, with Kulikov and Myers on your third pair, you might have a little bit too much money on that third pair. And as far as going forward, whether or not the Jets are going to sign him, it's all going to come down to that magic number. Because he's not a $5 million defenseman. But, you know, is he a $2 million defenseman? Is he a $3 million defenseman? I mean, that's really up to his agent and for Chevy to figure out.
Well, you know, and so that was going to lead to my next question. You know, he's a pending unrestricted free agent at season's end. We know what the Jets' salary cap situation is going to look
like. I don't think he's
going
to sign for $2 million, by the way.
No, I don't think he – I think that outside of Winnipeg – he's going to get a bigger contract.
He might get $4 million a year.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't surprise me to see him even get more. I think a lot of teams are going to look at him.
But when you have, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, but when you have Tucker Poolman making, what does he make, $1 million a year now on an NHL deal?
I don't even think so. I think it's like $750,000.
Yeah.
A lot more money than I make.
Fair enough.
Not by much. Not by much, as
only by $740,000.
I don't think that, I mean, I don't expect Tyler Myers to be back here next year.
No, I mean, that's the whole point. That's what you have a Tucker Poolman for. Tucker Poolman's suitable for a third-pairing right-side role. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you have Tucker Poolman. You're using him right now in the...
$775 is what Poolman's
what
making.
So, yeah. I mean, so the truth is that Tucker is the kind of guy... I mean, he's injured right now, and it looks like it's a bit of a long-term injury, unfortunately.
I think the Jets want him in the NHL next year, Dave.
Oh, I think so, too. I think but that's the whole point. Like, that's why you got to take a long-term approach with these defensemen. Sammy Nicou as well. Sammy Nicou, you know, Sammy Nicou is as hard on his game as I've ever heard him be after the game, or actually yesterday, sorry, after practice. He was, you know, talking about how terrible he was and da-da-da-da-da. And the fact of the matter is, and this is what people have to understand with defensemen, they take time to develop. It's, you know, it's like when a Frank Zappi is long roast, he doesn't put it in for 20 minutes and then it's ready to go. It's hours. And these
low
guys.
Low and slow?
Low and slow. And so the truth is that that's what these guys take. I mean, Logan Stanley, people are asking about him on Twitter from last night's game. He's getting top pairing minutes with all the defensemen that are out right now. And the fact is, he's been fine. And people hate to hear that because everybody wants to pile on Logan Stanley. But he's been good for what he is, which is a young defenseman just getting his taste of pro hockey. Same with Sammy Nicou. And, you know, again, like Tucker Poolman, even though he's older because he played college, but same with Tucker Poolman. So these guys are developing in the AHL, which is where they're going to develop, and they'll be available for the Jets, in my estimation, for full-time roles next year.
When we come back, another defenseman is making his triumphant return. That's Erik Karlsson. He returns to Ottawa later this afternoon to face the Senators. We're going to be joined by Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 to talk about the return of Erik Karlsson. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.